Daniel Lewis Crumpton here from DownloadedContent.com. Most of you guys are aware of the events that took place in Oregon a little over a year ago with the Malheur Wildlife Refuge, where some protesters or patriots or liberty activists, whatever title you feel more comfortable with, tried to ask the government for a redress of grievance in regards to an injustice that was happening to a family that we know as the Hammonds. As a result of that, there ended up being the death of Lavoie Finicum and the arrest of several people who were there or involved or participated. As of right now, you're probably aware that the first group that were tried were all found not guilty by a jury of their peers, or the charges were completely dismissed. And to make sure that this stays in the public eye and people stay aware, what I wanted to do was give Jason Patrick an opportunity to give you guys a update on the second batch of trials, what is the same, what is different, and to let you guys hear from somebody who is not only on the ground there, but directly involved with it. If you go to downloadedcontent.com/JPP, you'll find Jason Patrick's home and hopefully future expansion once he gets this ordeal behind him, where you can find out about Jason, follow his work, find out how to get a hold of Jason, and of course what we're going to start doing with this particular broadcast is give you daily updates as this trial goes on. And after Jason Patrick is able to put this episode behind him, see where that branch of downloadedcontent.com can go. So the following is going to be essentially Jason and myself having an informal conversation to let you guys know exactly what's happening without any of the glamour or glitter of mainstream or alternative media. Hope you enjoy, and please support Jason Patrick by going to GoFundMe.com/JasonPatrick. You're in jury selection, but tell people what your charges are as far as the felonies go. I know that most of them don't know about the precedent that's being set with the bench trial. So you just let people know about that haven't really been following this series of trials.
Well, the first charge is conspiracy to impede through violence, force, threat, or intimidation. The second charge is carrying firearms in a federal facility in furtherance of the conspiracy. And they're highlighting an aiding and abetting charge here in our trial. And then after the first trial, on the remaining defendants, they added charges, trespassing, tampering with equipment, and destruction of government property for me for cutting a single piece of barbed wire fence from private property. And so when they added those misdemeanors, from what I know of the law, I was looking forward to a jury trial as well to explain the circumstances surrounding the misdemeanors. And the rug got yanked out from under us when we were denied a jury trial on the misdemeanors. And then one of the other defendants also got charged with an additional felony depredation of property. So currently in our trial is really three separate trials. There's a jury trial for the original charges that everybody was charged with and Ammon's group was acquitted of. There's a bench trial on the misdemeanors they added to all the defendants. And then there's another separate jury trial that they added for the additional felony charge, which has some interesting stuff surrounding it because it's not having to go to trial on those charges having been arrested. A speedy trial violation, sort of a speedy trial violation, considering he was arrested a year ago
right
on that And if it's a separate charge and a separate thing, he should have been tried for it on a speedy trial rather than just thrown in with another group.
Right. Now, since the all around, you know, the acquittals of the first group of people for most of the charges, what's the likelihood of a jury coming back to find you guys guilty for what previous defendees were found not guilty of?
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing about, you know, the state of the union is, you know, you pick a jury and it depends on who you pick. I think it seems highly unlikely. But, you know, you could pick 12 people that would convict us in a heartbeat, no matter what the law says. But I have more faith that, currently, I have more faith in the jury process than that. The interesting part, from my perspective, watching these trials, even though I'm involved in them, but as an observer and the way that I analyze things, the more government grows, the more likely you get somebody from government or affiliated with government on a jury. And then it's not really, you know, if everything's government, even the jury becomes sort of government. It's not that way yet, but watching these trials, that's how it goes. But the likelihood of us getting, it doesn't seem very likely to me. You know, I would be shocked.
Yeah, I would almost say that having anybody on the jury that works for the government or gets their income from the government would be kind of a conflict of interest, to tell you the truth.
Well, you would think, but you're not the judge, so the judge, you know, seems to disagree with you on those points. Mm. She removes bias by asking if you can remove bias, and if you say yes, well, then the bias is removed, and
ta-da!
And on we go. Yeah. But like I said, I currently just, you know, from where I'm at, I still have faith in the jury system. The jury that's selected, I don't believe will convict me. If the law is followed, no jury could convict me. So, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? If you know where you are and who you are and what you did, and anyways, it's like that.
Yeah. Now, today, right now, I guess where you're at is the 15th of February. Where I'm at, it's the 16th. So you're still in jury selection mode right now.
Yeah, there was a jury selected today, so the jury is seated.
Okay.
There are some pending things that might be addressed Friday in court, and then we begin opening arguments on Tuesday. President's Day is a holiday for the government. Most other people, I think, are working. And then we'll have start trial on Tuesday with opening arguments.
All right. So my handy dandy calendar says Tuesday is going to be the 21st.
That's the one.
All right. And as it is right now, you're still representing yourself, but you do have legal assistance.
Yeah. I wasn't willing to give up my own rights to defend myself. I was forced standby counsel, but since it's here, I might as well use it. Mm-hmm. And in a year's time, and based on the acquittals, the mindset since tremendous. So, you know, having that standby counsel now, I think will do me some good. Given all that's transpired between now and then.
Right. Now, I want to make that point real quick. Let's just say, and we both know that it's unlikely that this jury is going to convict you guys of what another jury found the other guys not guilty for. What with the felonies, what would the worst case scenario be as far as punishment if you were found guilty?
If I've found guilty of all the charges, my maximum sentence is 13 years and 6 months. That's my maximum exposure.
And
in this case,
at what point in this entire ordeal did you make the decision that you were going to represent yourself?
we've talked about self-representation before, you know, long ago, you know, in other proceedings, you know, as things get, you know, sort of more and more fall to the wayside and courts get further and further from the Constitution, you can't even get lawyer institutionally because they know it's a loser, right? Oh, we can't argue the Constitution. The Supreme Court did away with it. So, you know, self-proclaimed patriots have to study and learn the law so that we can argue from constitutional grounds in courtrooms again and educate. I mean, what's really happened here, Daniel, is lawyers have been educated and judges have been educated and jurors have been educated and marshals have been educated on the Constitution. Like, one of the lawyers in the first case said, I didn't even know that was in the Constitution.
I've heard that
so
before.
So, having sworn an oath to it, right, to protect and defend it, was not even aware the words that we were talking about even existed in the Constitution. That's where we started from, right? So, it's been a learning experience for a lot of attorneys. They're not used to defendants that sort of understand law and the Constitution as well as the defendants that are currently in their presence.
Right. It's a paradigm shift for them. So me and you both know that you went into this with really the prerequisite that in any scenario you were going to represent pro se.
And, potentially, yes.
Okay. Now, I just want to point that out to people who are going to listen to this, because you're looking at 13 years, worst case scenario, and, you know, I think, you know, it's very commendable that you would be willing to do that. And it's, you know, I hope that it's going to set an example for everybody, you know, one, to get educated, two, to, you know, not deliberately go to trial, you know, where you could potentially go to prison for 13 years, but to at least be competent enough and know your rights enough to represent yourself in court. But you said you were forced assistant counsel. Did you you were being arraigned or before the arraignment, did you express that you didn't want any type of bar association help?
Yes, and to assert your rights, you're required to do that. You know, in order to have that right, you're required to do that, to insist that you don't want counsel. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't recommend this to everyone, right? You better, you know, have some understanding of the law, not just the Constitution, because the Constitution, unfortunately, isn't going to do you a hill of beans bit of good in any courtroom in America.
Right. Now, what was it in the arraignments, I suppose it was, there was a some skerfuffle about you saying that you have no rights. What was that situation with the judge? Is it Judge Judy Brown or what's her name?
Anna J. Brown.
And she's a federal judge.
He's a federal judge.
So I want people to understand that this is not a state trial. This is being tried in a federal court.
Yeah, so you have 26 defendants that are standing on their constitutional rights, and they're all being held without bail against their will, which is in the Constitution. They've stood on constitutional rights and are arrested anyway. And so you're in this courtroom and you know you're not going to get any bail and you know you're going to be held until trial and you know that you've been arrested exercising your constitutional rights while talking about other people's constitutional rights. So it's just a huge snowball of constitutional violations. And then you have a federal judge with the moxie to read you, which is the first time I was read my rights, right? Because honestly, I was never arrested. I was, quote, temporarily detained.
That's a long temporary.
So she's reading me my rights in court, and it's laughable, right? Do you understand these rights as I've read them to you? Well, I have to answer honestly, mm-hmm. Your Honor, I understand I have no rights at all, and you're the federal government, and you're going to do whatever you want.
And it's not like,
oh, she was miffed and upset, and I think didn't want to draw attention to it, and turned away. The reaction came later at a separate arraignment where she scolded me and called that an outburst, right? And it wasn't an outburst. I just simply stated it. I understand I have no rights at all, and you're the federal government. You're going to do whatever you want. How is that an outburst?
Right.
If I'd have said, yes, I understand, you wouldn't have called it an outburst.
Yeah.
But instead, I answered what I understand.
So you didn't get you didn't get slapped with contempt or anything like that.
He told me that, and this was way back when I was still in jail, you know, probably about a month later from February, so February, March, sometime in March, mm-hmm. March 23rd maybe, that based on that outburst, she didn't think that I would last through the trial, that I would have to watch the proceedings from a monitor inside the jail. Because she doesn't know what an outburst actually is, and that's just a real answer.
But it wasn't a part of the script. Damn it!
It didn't follow the script. I'm supposed to read you your rights, and you're supposed to say yes, I understand. And if you don't do it, then we might taser you and drag you to a monitor. I mean, I don't know what else to call it.
And getting back to the current trial, because we kind of already see, those of us who've been paying attention to this particular judge, she's not a big fan of the Constitution, not really so much.
No, what she said multiple times is that the defendants can absolutely speak to how the Constitution informed their state of mind. Couldn't possibly read it in this courtroom, but you can testify, if you take the stand, how the Constitution informed your state of mind.
Wait, what? You know, you really got to break that one down for me.
That's all that's allowed in Ms. Brown's courtroom, sir. If you want to talk about the Constitution, you can only talk about the Constitution on how it affects your state of mind.
This is on record.
It will not be read in the courtroom, and if you open it to read from it, you will be scolded and said you will not read from that in this courtroom.
This is on record in open court?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, sir, it is.
Wow.
Now, the transcript's going to be about a million pages long, I imagine, but it's in there.
Wow. So that's, I mean, basically it's, you know, you have a lot of different, I mean, you got serial killers who read the Holy Bible. You know what I mean? So I see what angle she's taking. You know, which is what is isn't what is according to the Constitution, and you know, I get it. So
it's like I said, if I wasn't, you know, you and I have talked about this, and we sort of know the state of affairs, and we have, you know, we have what we call beliefs of how it is, mm-hmm. And even with my beliefs, sitting in the courtroom watching it happen, it is unbelievable. Like, even though I believe that watching it happen is unbelievable. Like, everything you believe is true because it's happening right now in front of you. You're watching it happen.
Right. I think a lot of that is you have, you know, and like you said, we discussed this before. There's a difference between the law and statutes and acts or legality. And anybody who has been, you know, is a part of the Bar Association, they really don't know the law, and you and I have on several occasions from people with a bar have said, I've never seen that, and it's one of the Ten Amendments. And so what I have found is when you go into court, you know, it very much is a sport. You got two different sides, kind of like tennis, and then, you know, the judge or the umpire or whatever, and somebody like
I look at it more like theater. It's more like theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a show that they put on to, it's a show. It's not as much as it's a show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Part, the prosecution plays their part. The defense attorneys play their part. And the defendants, they play their part. And the government tells a story and then says you're guilty. And you're guilty based on the story.
Yeah. And I've always said that there is absolutely no difference between an attorney and a very good writer. It's who can tell a better story and who can find whatever loopholes in legality, but not the law. Now, before I forget, and while I do have it sitting in front of me, when you were talking about what the judge stated about the Constitution and how it affected your state of mind, I think for future reference, I'm looking at Shepard citations, which are Supreme Court rulings and notes and things. In 16 Am Jurisprudence 2nd, 2D or whatever it is, Section 97, Berry versus the United States, 273 U.S. 128 says, then a constitution should receive a literal interpretation in favor of the citizen is especially true with respect to those provisions which were designed to safeguard the liberty and security of the citizen in regard to person and property. And it would go on further to say something to the effect of any constitutional provision intended to confer a benefit should be literally construed in favor in the clearly intended and expressly designated beneficiary, which is you. So
it'd be interesting for people to go back and review the judge's ruling. She ruled that she won't grant a jury trial on the misdemeanors. And then she invited the attorneys to show her where she has the discretion to grant a jury trial or not.
Mm-hmm.
And after they gave their opinions, she said, it remains uncertain whether this court has the authority to grant a jury trial or not. However, even if I do have discretion, I won't grant a jury trial discretion. Right. Trying to decide whether she has and seeing whether she's not sure whether she does or doesn't, she states that even if she does, she will not land on the side of the Constitution.
Okay, so this is really what I want to focus on before trial begins, because and it's the bench trial avenue or angle that they're taking. Now, for people who don't know, the misdemeanors to me and from anybody else who I've talked to who are looking is kind of like a they know that the likelihood of you guys getting convicted is kind of slim to none with a jury. But then again, it's the government. And the government just, they can't afford to take one on the chin in this whole situation, because it may set a precedent for other protests or, you know, other extreme protests that took place, you know, at the refuge. So they've got to do something. They've got to get some type of a pound of flesh. And this is the way I'm looking at it. And it's to remove a jury of your peers who have common sense by giving you a bench trial and stating that you don't have a right to a jury trial. Now, me and you have discussed this before, and to me, I'm just as damn baffled as anybody else at, you know, the fact that your right to a trial by jury, according to the Ten Amendments, the Bill of Rights, is secured for any matter of controversy over $20. Now, if the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and surely these misdemeanor charges involve more than $20, how can you be, as a judge, unsure that a jury trial should be given to any of you guys?
Well, I mean, I can answer you that, and the answer is magic.
I believe in magic and don't even believe in that crap.
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, jury trial is in the Constitution a lot. Okay, it's not just like you know, sort of, kind of, it's in there a bunch. And it's in the Sixth and the Seventh Amendment. So in the Sixth Amendment, it's basically when it involves, it's talking about crimes, you know, if you're charged with a crime. Mm-hmm. All criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherever the crime shall have been committed. Mm-hmm. So that's crimes that involve life and liberty, because you're going to be incarcerated based on the verdict, right? Mm-hmm. And so they put it in there. Okay, and then when you go to the Seventh Amendment, we're talking about property, right? In suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about property. Property mm-hmm. in value of more than $20, you're going to have a jury trial. So what the Supreme Court did was they made waive our 6 and 7 and say, we do word. It's called misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with this magic word and my magic wand, right? And now you don't get them. See, misdemeanor's not in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So we did some magic. We took your rights with magic. We made a word, abracadabra, alakazam, misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. No more jury trial for you.
Right, right. Okay. So let me look up a actual reading. My pocket constitution's in the other room, and I'm connected to a wire. Let's see here. The amendment text says, in all criminal prosecutions, and I'm going to go by the common man's language, in a criminal prosecution, there's a victim, yes?
Yeah, okay. That too.
Well, after Jason Patrick, I believe that in front of that is the word versus. So what's the word before the word versus in your case here?
Say
that again.
And I'll call them.
All right,
I figured I'd call him to the stand.
You broke up a little bit. Say that again.
The United States of America.
Okay, so the United States of America is the criminal, or excuse me, not the criminal, Freudian slip, is the victim here. They're bringing a case against you. So what I would do, this is just me, and I didn't come up with this. I just found it from some other smartass on the internet. And, you know, in this instance, I would ask the judge in the misdemeanor who she represents in this trial. Or first I would ask, if there's a conflict of interest, can you be given a fair and just trial? The answer is obviously no. And then ask the judge who the judge represents. Well, the judge is going to have to tell you the United States government. So clearly there's a conflict of interest in any misdemeanor or bench trial. How, you know, the person representing the victim or the plaintiff is the one that's going to decide the outcome. I wonder how this is going to go. So the notion that you have that you can possibly have a fair and just ruling with such a clear, blatant and offensive conflict of interest is proof of the magic, the word magic.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's a show, and it's actually a magic show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a show. It's a magic show. You know, and other people have said, well, if you have the right to face your accuser, and your accuser is the United States of America, let's call that gentleman to the stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, you do whatever you want to do. You're a free moral agent. Some of these concepts that we're talking about, I would put them on record, you know, in open court of law and see what happens, you know, these ideas.
Well, what happens is they look at you quite stupidly and don't know what to do.
Yeah, we know that.
Because
right.
You're not reading from the magic script.
You're using words and other big words and so let's see here. I know that you you know, we set up the downloadedcontent.com/JPP or the Jason Patrick Project, and it was set up while you were still incarcerated, you know, waiting for your speedy trial without bond.
and you had family members that were kind of taking care of it, and so it's been rough getting information from you because most of your recording devices and whatnot have been seized, and it's been slow to get you there. But I do want to let people know who are going to listen to this, one, to continue to listen to the updates. Me and you are shooting for a daily update that I'm going to try my hardest to get up every day as soon as we're done on the Jason Patrick Project website. But the most important thing is because they've kind of tried to club you guys at the ankles with a sledgehammer financially, the only way that I know how people who support you, and they should, can help you out is through a GoFundMe account. Is that still active?
Yeah, I don't really ask for resources. I've had people tell me to ask for resources because they'd like to send them. the GoFundMe is not mine. It comes through a family member, and you know those resources definitely help out. So
okay, so that's the GoFundMe.com/JasonPatrick, and it's the Jason Patrick and Family Support Fund. But if people do hear this and they do want to help, which they should, because you're taking a stand for people in more ways than they realize, they can be safe that any funds that they send there will help you in this crusade?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I do want to put that out there. Now, this is just me. I'm not going to presume to put words in your mouth. You know, we're spiritual people. There are a lot of people who are out there who are spiritual, who are praying for you. I see it every single day. They're praying for you because you're an arrowhead, you're the tip of a spear. For a lot of other people who, and seeing this through is going to open up a lot of doors for people to not be so afraid of their government. And so what I would like to see is, one, you take care of this situation, walk away unscathed from it. I mean, you have been scathed because you spent a considerable amount of time in, you know, behind bars, and I know what that does on a person's psychology. What I would like to see in the future is you getting all this past you, but being equipped with, you know, because you travel a lot. A lot of people who don't know who you are, but they don't realize that you go anywhere in the country where there is an injustice, which ultimately is how you ended up in this situation. And it's my hope that you will continue to do that. And what
you and I both know that the costs involved in even trying to do that are difficult. You can't, you know, if you're chasing injustice that happens on a daily basis, mm-hmm. right? And I usually look for high-profile events. I have enough friends that share information that I usually find out about stuff very quickly. You either have to lose or quit a job, mm-hmm. right? I tried to do it while employed and managed to have 6 weeks vacation, mm-hmm. and I stayed completely within my parameters, but through either tyranny or being gone that long, ended up losing the job. I think I lost the job because the marshals confiscated my work phone. Mm-hmm. But I know that they, you know, being gone for 6 weeks was tough. Like, I didn't care what they paid me as long as I got 6 weeks, because I live to point at the injustices and try to make this country a better place for my kids and my grandkids and, right. and generations to come. You know, I think the whole country knows there's problems, and so my goal is to fix them, right? And nobody knows how, right? So we're sort of shooting in the dark here. Not shooting, but you know what I'm saying. So it's, you know, somebody told me before that I should ask for, like, you know, a $600 a month pledge, mm-hmm. because they know how much I could do with that. You know, it's the traveling expenses. You know, I'm a minimalist, so I don't use or take that much.
Right.
And, but I just don't feel right about asking people to give their own hard-earned dollars in the economy that we're in and things like that. But absolutely. I mean, that's what I use it for.
I mean, I don't think people really realize. I mean, you get a lot of people out there, or you have in the past, who this is kind of like a hobby for them. And I know, you know, personally for you, this is your life. This is what you live and breathe for. And you do a better job than you'll ever even know. You really, really do. And I know it is hard to ask for people to support you. But I'm not too proud to ask them to help you, because one day, if somebody goes to the GoFundMe and they give you $20, you know, or $100 or whatever it is, and you are able to go and set legal precedences as a common man with no bar, you know, then you may save them thousands of dollars or their freedom. And I think that as long as you're out there willing to be the guy who isn't claiming to be an expert, doesn't, you know, you're just going by your God-given rights, trying to do the right thing, I think that is something that's better than putting your money there is better than some of these other guys who, you know, they do it for notoriety.
Well, I appreciate the words, Daniel. It's humbling. I don't like to pander, right? I do what I do because it's right, and you know, and the support surely helps, but I'm going to do it regardless. And but absolutely, I mean, right now, I wished I was in Alabama.
All right, yeah. Now tell me, and I have a good idea what's going on in Alabama, but tell me what's going on with Alabama.
Well, there's a free baby home on Facebook. And so a young couple who is a missionary couple, travel, they live a different lifestyle than modern day America. They're minimalists, try to live off the grid, and travel around. And so they had a child, and that child was taken from them based on their lifestyle and their life choices. And, seems like they got a pretty good head on their shoulders, a religious couple and the religious beliefs, and is sort of how and why it's happened. And it happened in October, and it's still going on. And there's no way, for them to get their baby back other than comply with a lot of stuff that they'd rather not comply with. And it's just not the way it's supposed to go.
And so if you weren't dealing with this situation and about the Oregon deal, you'd be in Alabama.
I'd be in Alabama.
And absolutely. I know for a fact that you would be, you know, and that's why I think, you know, not only should people go to the GoFundMe account to help you.
It's crossed my mind to go there anyway.
I know, but they should. What I say is, whenever you do get past this current situation, I'd like to see you able to do that, but I'd like to see you able to do that with equipment to get the information out to people. You know, so yeah, it is travel, yeah, it is food. I'd like to see you with a camera, a workable rig, you know, and an avenue to where people can directly get the information straight from you. So that's another reason. But, you know, this one's getting – this is going to be a daily thing as the trial goes on. We'll be posting it. But I did want you to – I want to go ahead and end it on a rather humorous note. I want you to tell people about two things. One, the not standing for the judge, and two, the problem with identifying who the hell you are.
well, one – I don't remember the days, but one of the days last week, based on all that – I've stood for the judge through most of the trial, even though you and I don't really – support that necessarily, but you know, I did. Mm-hmm. And just as she completely just crapped on the Constitution all the way through and crapped on the jury trial rights and was crapping on some other stuff, I just got fed up with it. And so I'm sitting in the front row in our trial, and you know, it's the whole all rise and everybody stands, and I just stay seated and barely caught eye contact with the judge. And boy, she just snapped right on me about, you know, you're gonna stand. And I said something, I can't remember. And she goes, why can't, you know, you just need to conform with everybody else. And what's really funny is that word conform, I'm like, oh, well, I wasn't going to stand before, and now I'm definitely not going to stand because I don't conform just because somebody says so. But she didn't want to make, she'd already made a big issue of it, but she didn't want to make too big of an issue of it. So she basically said, well, you know, for your own sake, you know, you need to stand for the jury. I'm like, Your Honor, I'll absolutely stand for the jury because I still have some respect for juries until they're completely full of government officials. I'll absolutely stand for juries. So she just let that slide. So the next day, right? So I've been to court since July. The government took all my identifications when they arrested me. And, so I've had to go to court every single, through the whole first trial. I went to every day of the first trial. I've gone to every single hearing, and I've always gone without an identification because I didn't have any because they'd taken back their papers from me. They're their papers anyways, right? They're not my identification. They're just government papers. I'm me. I'm my only identification. You can't steal it because I'm the only me. So I go in there just like I normally do, try to get in, and the marshal that was there said, you can't come in. I'm like, yes, I can. No, you can't come in. I'm like, okay, so you're going to order me to leave? Yes, you're ordered to leave. So you're ordering me to leave? Yes. Okay, so I left. Right?
Now,
I'm ordered.
Now, I'll tell you the first responses that people hit me up with when the article about that was released was, "What's he doing? Is he out of his mind?" And I'm like, "No, y'all need to chill out because I know Jason and I know that he probably did it in the most calm, relaxed way. I mean, what do you do? You know, the guy's ordering you to leave. You don't want to get tased. So, all
right. Right. So at that exact moment, I'm ordered to be in court. And I'm ordered to leave, right? I'm ordered by the judge to be in court. If I'm not there, the marshals will actually hunt me down. But the marshals, at that given moment, are ordering me to leave.
Right.
So I'm not going to fight with you. I left. I went up to the coffee shop that's about a block away. And the interesting part is, in the coffee shop is four marshals. So I just sit down and drink my coffee. The marshals are talking about the weather and I think Eastern Oregon, and I've been over there. So I've talked to them about the weather and they left, and I'm just sitting there. And next thing you know, my attorney shows up. Probably about 20 minutes later, my attorney shows up. What are you doing? I'm like, they ordered me not to come in. Well, come on, we got to go. So we go back in. Well, it turns out the marshals, she got a note from the marshals that were in the coffee shop that I was in the coffee shop. So she thought I was just blowing her off and just sitting at the coffee shop when I was supposed to be in court. Mm-hmm. But before I got in there, somebody said, no, the marshals told him to leave. And so he was sitting at the coffee shop, and then the other marshals told her I was there. So it's funny, the marshals in the lobby would not allow me into the court because they couldn't identify me. By me. But the marshals in the coffee shop had no problem identifying me as me. It's the same me. I showed the exact same identification in court as I did at the coffee shop.
Yeah, and but I bet you that the marshal that ordered you to leave wasn't held for contempt.
No. And so she made a stipulation that anybody that's late after that is going to get $100 fine. And I asked the judge, I'm like, judge, if I'm obeying the presumably lawful orders of the marshal, am I going to be charged $100 for following a presumably lawful order? She said something to the effect of, we'll get that worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, I think that's a good note. In
other words, I have to keep up the illusion and make everybody else afraid, even though I know, Patrick, that you're not afraid.
Right. So, I think that's a good note to end it on. But you said Tuesday was the first day of court. You're going to be doing your opening statement?
Nope, I've handed it over. Now that we've brought all the lawyers up to speed and the lawyers believe and the lawyers understand, I've let them go ahead and take it. I think we're good.
All right. And if people need to get a hold of you, what's the quickest way to get a hold of you?
The quickest way to get a hold of me, probably on Facebook.
Right,
I'm Jason Patrick on Facebook, and if you send me a message, I'll open it, and if you're a decent human being, I'll answer it, and if you're not, I probably won't.
All right, and you also have the Fight for Freedom Never Sleeps on Facebook. That's still active, right?
It is still active. It hasn't been updated in a long, long time because, you know, I got all this stuff going on, and I can't wait to get back to it, but okay. Right now it's just sitting there waiting.
Right, and of course...
But yeah, I still look at it and can catch the messages from there and stuff.
Cool. And of course, there's the Jason Patrick Project on Facebook, which I'm an admin of, but I just set it up. It's really you and your families to run, which is probably where most people are going to get most of the links that we're going to be doing is there, because I can easily post it there. But all right, man.
I'm going to need help, right? I need somebody to produce things and help. You know, carry the. This isn't a Lone Ranger project. So
no, never is, man. And that was what was so cool about when Zen in the Car was up was all of us working as a team, and we all kind of got pulled in different directions, but we still need to check in on each other from time to time. But I don't know if the next ones will. We'll see how it goes. These should be turned around pretty quick. And you know, the main thing is, man, I want. The people who really still do have liberty and freedom really inside of them, and it wasn't like a phase or a fad that goes out with whoever the Republican nominees happen to be, to do whatever they can, man, to help you out on your path and spread what you're doing as much as they can. And, of course, you got to eat and you got to travel. So I'm looking forward to the rest of this trial because I think it's going to be a, you know, it'll be a cakewalk for you, bro. Like I said one time before, I said the dumbest thing that the government could possibly do is put Jason Patrick in front of a jury and let him run his mouth.
Right. I'll tell you what, brother, that scares the fire out of the other lawyers. Well, you're going to talk for yourself? Hold on, I'm supposed to talk for people.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally giving them a nosebleed, and I think it's brilliant because you'll be able to look at those people and speak to them one-on-one as a human being and put them in your shoes, you know.
You know who I am, and I'm pretty much surrounded by mostly guys similar to me, and the evidence really speaks for itself. I mean, the media does a disservice because they got to sell advertising, and the only way you sell advertising is with sexy headlines, and armed militants take over refuge is a sexy headline.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done the American public a disservice by telling them a bunch of lies. The government fed off the lies so that they could, I don't know, practice training and go kill people because that's what they're the best at.
Mm-hmm.
And so in court, when you actually show the evidence, unfortunately, most people don't get to come to court. The myth goes away really quickly. You know, the jurors go, "What? This is the evidence?"
Yeah, dude. I mean, like, okay.
And, a conspiracy of some kind.
Yeah, and when the whole thing first started, you know, whenever it first started, I remember how the media, even the alternative media, just blew things to such a stupid degree. And I remember calling you right after, you know, it was like announced on CNN, you know, there's a hostile takeover of a bird refuge. You know, these guys came in on choppers with, you know, fully automatic. They really blew it out of proportion. And it wasn't just CNN and Fox and everybody. It was everybody. And then I call you and I'm like, "Hey, dude, what's going on?" And you were the most chill, relaxed. You're like, "Everything's cool, dude." I mean, you know.
Yeah, it just, you know, everyone in America is losing their mind. The media and the government told them to, and they don't really care about what's happening. Because the media and the government told them to get out of control, and it's chaos.
Damn.
And so when, you know, so they're basing their whatever they think about the trial on what they heard, and the people in the trial are going, "What in the world?
Yeah.
This isn't anything like what they told us."
And there's a few things about this whole ordeal, specifically regarding you, that really makes me question a lot of things. One is, there have been previous defendants who, where the charges were dismissed because they were practicing their First Amendment, whatever your opinion is about those individuals, those charges were dismissed. And me and you have worked in the media, exercising independent media for a long time. You know, back in 2012, 2013, we started. So I don't understand why you, because you were reporting for me in a way when we were doing Zen in the Car and when
Zen in the Car and
and doing Digital Hourglass. So you were an embedded reporter. So I don't understand why. You know, that hasn't been brought up in most of the charges to be dismissed against you because you
It's the same. It's the same thing when I went to Council Idaho. It's the same thing when I went to Seattle for the Skylar Barbeau hearing. It's, you know, it's the same thing. All the things I went to when I went to Atlanta, I covered the stuff out there. When we went to
Habersham,
where was Beauchamp Fossevin, when a baby got a grenade in the crib. We went up there and covered it. And so you can imagine, if you just, you know, get arrested every time you go to cover an event like this and charged with conspiracy because you talk to other people about going and covering the terrible things that are happening, using every bit of your First Amendment right, right? Yeah. It's not just, you know, protest isn't even in the First Amendment. It's not even in there. So I wasn't protesting. I was peacefully assembling to petition the government for a redress of grievances while exercising my freedom of speech and my freedom of press.
Yeah, and shortly before your phone was confiscated in a different altercation, you were running through Bamboozer, and that was running through the old website. So there's a long-standing precedent of you being an independent journalist. In your own right. That's how a lot of people see you. And so far, I haven't heard that mentioned one time. And I would say push it. But then again, I don't want to get a subpoena to go to fucking freaking Oregon, okay? You know, but if I got to.
Right.
You know, but there's that. That was the first thing that kind of just boggled my mind about your case. Specifically, which is, why are we doing this? Because there's already been a precedent that, one, these other guys were found not guilty, and two, if you're a journalist, you get a pass.
Oh, I mean, Daniel, you can definitely come and testify how the Constitution informs your state of mind on what you think you can do with the First Amendment. They're going to charge you anyway, but you can definitely come say how the Constitution speaks to your state of mind.
Now, there is something, I mean, if you got time to talk about it, I think it'd be cool. It'd be a little bit more personal, so if you don't want to do that, that's cool too. But you spent a good bit of time in jail. And
well, I mean, I spent, 13 days total prior to being up here.
All right, and for people who haven't been behind bars or been in that system, tell them, if you don't mind, tell them what that does to your psychology. And it is a life-changing event. It allows you to see things from a completely different perspective.
Well, see, most people imagine that, you know, people that go to jail deserve to be there. So, you know, what I'd like to do is take people who are just watching an event or recording an event, you know, and doing something that they know for a fact is not illegal, and then they're under arrest. Mm-hmm. And there's no legal reason for them to be under arrest, and they know it, but they're going to jail anyways. And then you're in behind bars, and you're not released to make a phone call. Nobody knows you're in there, and you're just at the mercy of whoever took you You know, when I went to jail in Georgia, they didn't even let me make a phone call for 3.5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody knew where I was. Mm-hmm. No one on the planet knew where I was because they weren't going to let me make a phone call.
No, it's a machine.
I didn't eat for 3 days. I think the only reason they let me make the phone call is so that they could get me to eat.
Now, I've experienced the same thing where I was put in jail. I've been put in jail more times than I really want to in the past few years, but I think I discussed it with you. I'm not quite sure, but I was arrested and taken down to the county jail, and I demanded a phone call. And I don't know if I told you the story. I dialed 911 to report that I'd been kidnapped.
Yes. Yeah, I do. I remember that.
That guy wasn't too happy with me, but
but what's funny is even there. So I make my phone call. Like, I happened to, you know an attorney at the time, and the jail had the attorney's phone number. And then he came down to see me. And you want the first thing he asked me, he sees me and he says, okay, tell me this. How in the world did you upload a phone call between you and the sheriff from jail? Right? Because there's a media team that works behind the scenes, and I'd talked to the sheriff because we were trying to expose some things in Houston County through Freedom of Information Act and things like that, and that all got thwarted when I got arrested, for sure. But it got uploaded about an hour. I think I was in jail for 3 hours, and that uploaded.
Yeah, it was pretty
while
quick.
I was in jail.
It was pretty quick.
Yeah. Threw him in the car, and
I mean, actually, and you know this because you've seen my police jacket, and I'm sure that yours has it too. Here in Warner Robins, in the caution section, it actually has constitutionalist and zeninthecar.com, and the Warner Robins police around here, man.
Beware, the man you're arresting believes in the Constitution still.
Yeah. They don't like us at all, and there's probably not too many officers on the force here that doesn't, you know, have your name somewhere in their head or been briefed on you.
Well, some of them are holding legal documents that won't allow them to forget, so.
It's great. All right.